Hello, welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa, bringing you the News Gazette today, December 10th, 2025. Hope it's a good day for you so far. And today on the front page is a picture of a building with the heading Healthy Alliance, and it's a picture of the, it's a view of the Stevens Family YMCA, 2501 Field South Drive in Champaign, and the land south of the building, which Carl Health will donate for construction of a shared facility. And this article is by Jana Wiersema from Champaign. Development at the Fields. Stevens Family YMCA plans to expand through shared facility with Carl Health. The Stevens Family YMCA is planning a major facility expansion in partnership with Carl Health that is expected to add 30,000 square feet to the Y's offerings at the Fields. The overall project is about providing opportunities for the Y to impact more families, said Stevens Family YMCA CEO Jeff Scott. We are very busy, very full here, and that expansion really gives us the opportunity to expand our mission and expand our impact. Carl will donate land directly south of the existing YMCA building for a new facility that will include space for both entities, organization officials announced at noon on Tuesday. This collaboration demonstrates a shared dedication to supporting the ongoing health and well-being of Champaign-Urbana and surrounding areas, ensuring services evolve to meet the community's needs, said Caleb Miller, Senior Vice President of Carl Health, Specialty and Ambulatory Care. The current plan is to build an approximately 50,000-square-foot facility with 30,000 square feet for YMCA programming and 20,000 square feet for Carl to provide therapy, rehabilitation, and wellness services, Scott said in a letter to the community. The current YMCA facility at 2501 Fields South Drive, which is 75,000 square feet, will remain in use. Stevens Family YMCA officials said that the organization's portion of the new building is expected to include youth and teen spaces, wellness and fitness areas, classrooms, community connection areas, enhanced preschool and youth programming spaces, a dedicated area for Larkin's Place programming, outdoor turf areas for child watch, youth sports, and family activities. The project is still in the early stages of planning, Scott said. Final designs and construction timelines have not been set, and the organization is still looking at funding options and community needs. We don't have a definite date, but we're certainly trying to get started on this project sooner than later, he told the News Gazette. And, of course, it depends on a lot of things like the continued planning and finalization of that. Depends on the fundraising and our ability to secure enough philanthropic dollars to get this thing done. So we don't know. But we're certainly aiming to be doing things in 2026 for sure, if we can. The expansion is expected to require support from multiple funding sources, including donations and grants, local YMCA officials said. A major fundraising campaign will be needed, with more details to come. This project will continue to evolve as community feedback costs and fundraising progress are evaluated, the organization said. When asked about the potential project costs, Scott replied that the local YMCA doesn't have enough secure information to give an estimate at present. However, he added that bids are going out, which will give them an indication of the price tag. The Stevens Family YMCA has over 5,500 family memberships and over 14,000 members, and demand for programming continues to grow, the organization said. The need for expanded space is clear, said Board President Lynn Barnes. The project has the potential to impact thousands of local families for generations to come, and we are committed to stewarding this process thoughtfully and transparently as planning continues. The news of the expansion comes a few months after the Stevens Family YMCA opened a YMCA Express satellite gym at 3301 Field South Drive in July for members looking to get away from the crowds at the main building's wellness center. This smaller location is open 24/7. When asked if the new facility will alleviate the need for the YMCA Express, Scott replied, "Don't know for sure. It kind of just depends. But right now, we don't foresee that happening. Right now, we plan to keep them both." Scott said that the updates on the expansion project will be communicated on the Stevens Family YMCA's website and social media, and individuals who wish to know more can also reach out to him directly at the YMCA. At the top of the front page is an article from Champaign County Courthouse by Luke Taylor. Associate judge stepping down early next year. Benjamin says her next steps include private practice, U of I College of Law. An associate judge based in the Champaign County Courthouse announced Tuesday that she'll be resigning in the new year, leaving a wonderful experience behind. "I'm grateful for the support I've had from my family and from my colleagues here, and ultimately from the community, as I've been a judge for 8 years, and the positive reviews I've received and the kind words everyone has expressed," said Anna Benjamin, associate judge in the 6th Judicial Circuit. "I'll miss everyone greatly, my colleagues, but hopefully I'll be seeing them back in court as well." Benjamin told the News Gazette that she plans to resign on January 30th because she's looking to take the next step in her professional career in private practice. She plans to continue teaching as an adjunct professor at the University of Illinois College of Law and continue being involved in the Illinois State Bar Association and the Family Law Section Council. During her time as a judge, Benjamin served on committees of the Illinois Supreme Court and was on the directors' boards for both the Illinois Judges Association and the Illinois Judges Foundation. "I've done a lot of teaching for new judges, especially, and mentoring new judges," she said. "I've really enjoyed that, and I've also really enjoyed the opportunity to do a lot of research and writing. When I take opinions under advisement, I've taken on different types of cases that I did not always expect, but where I was able to learn a lot in areas of all kinds." While she had spent plenty of time in courtrooms as an attorney, Benjamin said that becoming a judge revealed to her all of the behind-the-scenes work that before she could only assume was happening. Growing up, Benjamin said that she actually didn't want to go into law because she watched her father's career as a lawyer, judge, and state's attorney. Seeing what he dealt with in politics of those positions made her want to pursue different routes, which led her to get a degree in anthropology. Later, she decided she wanted to pursue something more practical, where I could help people right away after getting my degree. Law school opened her eyes to more of the legal system than even watching her father work at it. "I pretty much believe the only thing lawyers did was to go to court, because that's what I had seen my dad being a litigation attorney," Benjamin said. "But I found out that, of course, lawyers do many, many things in the community and many different types of work besides just litigation. My passion and my interest was advocacy." And there is a photo included with this article of Champaign County Judge Anna Benjamin as she puts on her red robe to officiate 8 of the 12 marriages held at the courthouse on Valentine's Day this year. She plans to resign from the bench effective January 30th. Let's continue on with the last article on the front page about the election 2026 in the Champaign County. From Urbana by Jana Wiersema, non-binding tax questions weighed for primary ballot. It'd be a gauge of opinion to inform future proposals. Champaign County officials are hoping to put 3 questions on the March 17th primary ballot to take the public's temperature on potential approaches to tackling a general fund deficit, raising the sales tax rate, raising the property tax rate, or making reductions to county services that could include layoffs. County Board Chair Jennifer Locke emphasized that the 3 yes or no questions, if placed on the ballot, would be non-binding. She compared the approach to taking a poll, with the results informing the board as it makes decisions. "We want to make sure we're giving the voters what they want," she said. "That's the thought of it. There's no tax going on the ballot." The 3 proposed questions were on the agenda for Tuesday night's Committee of the Whole meeting. In order to get on the ballot, each question will need to be approved at a regular county board meeting. The next one is set for December 18th. As part of this year's budget process, the board transferred almost $2 million from the Public Safety Sales Tax Fund to the general fund to float the current deficit, she said. This led to a meeting between herself, Finance Committee Chair Ellie Hanauer Friedman, and Vice Chair John Farney, and representatives from County Executive Steve Summers' office. We can't keep bailing out the general fund with public safety sales tax because it's not a wishing well, Locke said. We had some money set aside and we've used it. And if we go forward any further, we don't have that. So we wanted to kind of educate the voters about the situation of that we have these choices. We can increase revenue, we can decrease services. It's a way to bring the options before them and finding out kind of the will of the voter. She confirmed that if the county sought to raise sales tax or property taxes in the future, either move would require a referendum. Per the proposed question, any increase in sales tax would not apply to food or medicine. In November of 2024, a referendum to increase the county's public safety sales tax from 25 cents to 50 cents per every $100 spent failed by a margin of 66 to 34%. Locke said she believes that November 2026 is the earliest that another referendum on the public safety sales tax would be allowed on the ballot, but added, that's putting the cart way before the horse. For the possibility of reduced county services, the proposed question states that examples include fewer sheriff deputies, reduced hours for public service from county departments, less county highway maintenance, and or county employee layoffs. Quite frankly, this is the thing that we would like to do least, Locke said, adding that county employees are already overlooked. She added that if the county were to take this approach, it wouldn't happen right away. This would be a long deliberation, and hopefully if any job losses had to occur, we would obviously do our best to just make it through, not filling positions as they come forward, she said. But we're not talking about that this year. When asked what factors have led to the general fund deficit, Locke cited the property tax extension limitation law. As prices go up, as the cost of living goes up, we're capped at what we can bring in our property taxes, what the general fund can bring in, she explained. We're capped at the lesser of the consumer price index, or 5%. She added that the only way to get rid of that cap is through a referendum. The proposed language for the three non-binding questions is as follows. Number one, to address Champaign County's general fund structural deficit, I support an increase to the sales tax on purchases of goods, not including food and medicine, in Champaign County. Number two, to address the Champaign County's general fund structural deficit, I support an increase to the county's property tax rate that could result in paying a higher property tax. And number three, to address Champaign County's general fund structural deficit, I support a reduction in county services, such as fewer sheriff's deputies, reduced hours for public service from county departments, less county highway maintenance, and or county employee layoffs. Let's continue on in our communities in Section A9 with an article by Jana Wiersema from Champaign about Chaplin Realty with the title, Commercial Building at Springfield and Mattis to be Torn Down and Replaced. A multi-tenant building at the southwest corner of Springfield and Mattis Avenues will be torn down to make way for a new structure that was also have space for multiple businesses. We're hoping to finalize plans in January and have it up by the end of September, said Laura Chaplin of Chaplin Realty, which owns the property. The new single-story building will have a smaller footprint and include space for four tenants, including two units with drive-through capabilities, she said. Jimmy John's, which previously operated a location at the site, has yet to respond to an inquiry by the News Gazette about whether the chain plans to be one of the tenants in the new structure. We've actually kind of been letting it fall vacant since Big B Coffee closed in 2019, Chaplin said of the current building. a salon at the property also closed, along with the country squire cleaners, and Chaplin said that the real estate company has experienced difficulty finding tenants for the property. She also noted that drive-throughs have become more popular post-pandemic, and it just made more sense to start fresh rather than to add these onto the existing building. Jim Getz, who owned the Big B franchise at his site, previously told the News Gazette that one of the factors in his decision to close was the lack of a drive-through, which he felt was necessary to be competitive. He also left to focus on opening a shop in Indianapolis. According to permit application filed earlier this month, demolition of the 10,000-square-foot building at Springfield and Mattis is estimated to begin December 15th, pending city approval. The work is expected to take about 1 month. Locals may remember that the same storefront that recently housed Jimmy John's was once the home of the Village Inn Pizza Parlor. And there are pictures of this multi-tenant space at the southwest corner of Springfield and Mattis Avenue, which previously housed a Jimmy John's, among other things, and that it will be torn down to make way for a new building that will also have space for multiple businesses. And another article on that same page about the Early Transfer Academy by Luke Taylor. Parkland Unit 4 launch program tracking AP and dual credit courses. High school students in the Unit 4 school district have a new way to pursue college credits and fast-track higher education thanks to a new partnership with Parkland College. Unit 4 Early Transfer Academy, which launches this coming summer, will allow students to earn both their high school diploma and the general education core curriculum credential from Parkland upon graduating high school. Parkland President Pam Lau said that Parkland folks partnered closely with Unit 4 administration to develop the program, and she's excited to finally have it off the ground after all that work. It's taken many months of planning, and we really believe that this will give that structure to the taking of dual credit, Lau said. It's not just a class here and a class there, but if you actually take it as how it's organized in the ETA documents, then they can actually finish something. This four-year program will include advanced placement courses, dual credit courses at the high schools, and college courses over at Parkland's campus. Those different courses types combined will help students obtain the GECC, which establishes that they have finished their general education requirements. Lau said that this credential is legally protected in the state of Illinois, so any higher education institution that students apply to must accept the entire package. That means that students don't have to worry about being required to retake any courses because of requirements they weren't aware of or differences between one institution and another. If you finish the whole package, there is a potential that, depending on the student's major and dependent on how many times the student wants to change their major, if they are focused on where they want to go, this can actually reduce the journey to a baccalaureate degree by a full year, Lau said. Advanced placement and dual credit courses are nothing new to the high school students, and Parkland College classes are available to anyone. But the ETA will help keep students on track through the school year and summers to end up with the credential that will carry them forward. Lau said that students will be expected to take a few summer classes, but mostly complete their college work during the school year. Examples of classes students could take include anthropology, public speaking, music appreciation, biology, and diverse U.S. cultural expression, some of which aren't the sort of courses that they'd have access to in their regular high school schedule. Lau said that ideas similar to the ETA have been floated before and that Parkland is happy to be working with the largest school district in the community to kick off this version. Ideally, she said, the ETA will be able to expand to other school districts as well in the future. Let's head over to the opinion section and check in with J. Mark Powell in his Holy Cow History article. Today's article has a picture of a well-dressed shopper, a very vintage black and white photo, using one of the earliest versions of Sylvan Goldman's folding basket carriage for self-service in the stores. And the heading says, Sylvan Goldman's Crazy Shopping Contraption. Ready or not, the holiday shopping season is upon us. Though online orders have taken a big bite out of the in-person retail experience, stores and shops will still be plenty crowded. And a few folks will even know a quiet, unassuming genius played a huge role in making shopping a little easier. Sylvan Goldman was just like ambitious businessmen everywhere. He was always on the lookout for ways to take a good idea and make it better, and then take better and make it the best. Born into a Jewish family in Indian Territory, modern-day Oklahoma, in 1898 he was raised in his immigrant father's dry goods store, where he learned the family business. Though he left school after the eighth grade, he still had a keen imagination and a clear head for business, eventually finding his life's calling in the grocery business. By the late 1930s, Goldman was approaching age 40. He and his brother had spent time in California during the Roaring Twenties. They returned to Oklahoma, eager to copy a new concept that had fascinated them in the Golden State, the supermarket. They were convinced that sooner shoppers would embrace it, too. In time, they opened one in Oklahoma City. It soon grew to five stores. By 1934, they acquired the Humpty Dumpty grocery store chain. That success didn't satisfy Goldman. Good wasn't good enough. He wanted to create the best possible shopping experience for his customers, many of whom were women. Shoppers back then usually went to the store with a basket, which they carried on one arm. If they put in too many items, it was unwieldy to lug around. Mothers with small children frequently had a hard time keeping the kids in line while also struggling with the bulky basket. Inspiration came calling. Tinkering in his spare time, Goldman came up with something new. Drawing on the example of a folding chair, he devised a metal frame complete with wheels and a handle for pushing. Shoppers could fill it with products to their heart's content, and moms could even place unruly little ones in it so that they could focus on their buying. Calling this invention the cumbersome folding basket carriage for self-service stores, Goldman proudly unveiled it to his customers on June 4th of 1937. And they hated it. Men thought using the contraption made them look effeminate. Women said the thing reminded them of something that many had happily put behind them. "I'm done pushing my last baby carriage," one angry shopper snapped. Goldman's bright shopping idea was in danger of being shelved. The very innovation he originally thought would gain new business suddenly risked losing customers for good. He had to do something and do it fast. Once again, creativity came to the rescue. Goldman hired models, the prettiest ladies and the handsomest gentlemen he could find, paying them to simply push his newfangled carts up and down store aisles like regular shoppers. And it worked. Then, as now, people love to associate themselves with the smart set. Seeing good-looking people using this new gizmo persuaded other shoppers to grab one, too. And in doing so, they saved the modern shopping cart. Sylvan's imagination didn't stop there. He also invented the grocery stacker, a milk bottle rack, and even a baggage cart, still used at airports today, all of which made him a multimillionaire. He was generous with his money, supporting the arts in his native Oklahoma, the National Conference of Christians and Jews, and dozens of other charities. He was even made into an honorary chief of the Pawnee Indian tribe and inducted into the Oklahoma Hall of Fame. When he passed away in 1984 at the age of 86, his obituary said that he was worth $200 million, nearly $750 million today. The Washington Post reported it was probably twice that. Not bad for a guy who didn't make it to the ninth grade. So, the next time you're pushing a grocery cart, or buggy, depending on the part of the country where you live, be sure to remember Goldman, plus all the handsome hunks and lovely ladies who made shopping in comfort possible. Continuing on with our communities, we have an article about the 31st Annual Senior Citizens Dinner by Jennifer Bailey from Westville. What a friendly gathering. Westville students and community welcome time together at annual holiday event. It was a cozy and festive sight with all the holiday attire and a nice meal to boot in the Westville High School Gymnasium Tuesday for the 31st Annual Senior Citizens Dinner. One attendee, Westville resident Ken Kumbau, came in order to receive a candy cane from Santa and enjoy the company around him. Kumbau said he makes it a point to attend the annual event to catch up with people he doesn't always see. He said it's a nice community event. Students also enjoy being part of it. Westville High School junior Madeline Doggett said, "It's so wonderful to see all these senior citizens coming together and seeing their old friends. When I'm older, I love that for myself. It's just a nice opportunity." Westville School Superintendent Seth Miller said, "It's such a generous community, and I think it's a good opportunity for our kids to give back," Miller said. He said it's also a good opportunity for students to see how many local organizations help with support in Westville, like the Lions Club, Santa's Anonymous, St. Mary's Church, and others. This is a good way to kind of pay it forward to the people that supported them, and hopefully it inspires some of these kids to want to do the same for those that stay here in Westville and make it their home long-term, Miller said. More than 250 Westville and surrounding communities residents enjoyed a turkey meal along with Christmas music, handmade crafts, and gifts. The event is a district-wide collaboration, with elementary students making ornaments and placemats for each visitor, and student council members from the junior high and high school serving each guest. The event started in 1995 by Westville Administrator Denny Watson as a way for the students and schools to give back to the community school board members, local legislators, and administrators, serve the food while students provide table service, music, games, and gift giveaways. It's always well received by visitors who appreciate the chance to visit with alumni and old high school rivals, catch up with former teachers and coaches, and receive recognition and respect from the current generation of Westville students, according to Westville School District officials. And there's a picture of Westville resident Ken Kumbau as he receives a candy cane Tuesday from Santa Claus at the 31st Annual Senior Citizens Dinner at Westville High School. And from the Champaign County Sheriff's Office, Champaign man arrested after threat altercation at the craft plant, by Jana Wiersema. A Champaign man was arrested Monday night after allegedly threatening to shoot up the local craft plant after he was not allowed inside to make a food delivery, the Champaign County Sheriff's Office reported. Devontae Gathings, 31, has been arrested on charges of aggravated assault, intimidation, aggravated battery to a peace officer, aggravated resisting arrest, and aggravated driving under the influence, as well as an arrest warrant from Iroquois County. Additionally, the Sheriff's Office said that another individual at the scene was arrested by the Champaign Police Department as part of an unrelated investigation. That person was not identified by name. Sheriff deputies were called around 7:30 p.m. to the plant at 1701 West Bradley Avenue in an unincorporated area of Champaign. Deputies said two individuals were delivering food when one of them, later identified as Gathings, made the threat after not being allowed inside by craft security. Deputies said a physical altercation occurred when they attempted to detain Gathings, who resisted and wrapped his arm around a deputy's neck, which was interpreted as an attempt to choke him so that he would pass out, the office said. Ultimately, the deputies and assisting Champaign police officers were able to get Gathings into custody without further incident and without escalating use of force, according to Sheriff's Office. The deputy involved was not seriously injured. And anyone with information about the investigation is encouraged to contact the Sheriff's Office Investigations Division at 217-384-1213. And you can also remain anonymous through Champaign County Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8777. We're going to take a break here now with our first section of the News Gazette, dated December 10th. I'll be back in just a moment.